You could have been a supporter of any football team. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. You could have been following the champions of the Champions League. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. What's all this stuff you're giving us? There's just one team for me, and that's the town where I come from. In Bromley, in Bromley, in Bromley.
Hello everyone and welcome back to yet another instalment of Ravens Weekly. My name is Matt Hall and as always these days I'm joined by Josh Tindall. How are you today, Josh?
Yes, very good.
Josh in the house, very much so.
In the house.
I thought you might have gone for a little jingle there.
Hang on.
Can we have one?
Wait.
To start off the podcast. Look, start as we mean to go on. What we got?
It's the DJ chimes, Josh. Isn't it?
Go on.
Or should we do cricket?
Let's do the crickets.
Okay, hang on.
That is pre-podcast scenes.
Should we do the trombone?
Let's do the trombone.
No, don't
I'm not
like that
one.
Don't like that. There's one here.
Oh, come on, sort
it
out.
Which is just named Sturk.
I think that's Ryan Sturk's complete interview.
Do you think it is? Oh, we've got an air horn.
That'll do. There we go. That is the noise we need to start this podcast off, right?
I like that one.
I think we're going to move on from that. But anyway, a nice intro today, I think. Let us know what you think.
We dragged that intro out, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We did. We're getting desperate now.
We are.
Boy, are we getting desperate. Let's start off by talking about the Easter weekend then. And that started with a Good Friday trip away to Barnet. Fantastic away following on the day. And we'll talk about that in a minute. Josh, one of the more peculiar press boxes I've sat in, I've got to be honest. I did get sunburnt.
Yeah. No, I was... It was a very tight squeeze. I think Dan was sitting on my lap for the majority of the game and the sun was beaming on us. I think you got a bit of a tan.
I did top up my tan. That's one way of putting it.
Yeah.
Luckily, I have
the
my
shades
sunglasses.
Came out.
The shades came out. It was like you and me at the end. It was like Men in Black interviewing
Andy Woodman.
That's what
Callum said.
Yeah, it is what Callum Woodman said. Callum Reynolds. No, that's a hybrid of who we've got on the podcast today, actually, isn't it?
He was like, what were we doing? We were interviewing Andy. Then he came up to us. He was like, all right, Gaffer, you're getting interviewed by the Men in Black.
That's exactly what he said. You're absolutely right. But anyway, moving on to the game itself, obviously that Barnet were fifth in the table at the time. Bromley making the trip to North London to take them on and an away support of 379. Brilliant noise on the day as well.
Really good noise.
And that's been the case for quite a few away games and home games, of course, recently. The noise in that away end at the Bromley away games has really improved and the atmosphere at the home games is really good as well. Now, of course, Bromley went 1-0 down just before half-time, despite having several chances in the first half. However, pulled it level 4 minutes into the second half. Josh, there's been a fair bit of debate over
whose
this goal
was it?
What camp are you in? Cheek or show me?
I don't know, because when I watched it back, obviously you kept sending me different versions of it on Friday night, and I was like, I don't know. I think personally, right, so Omar's struck it and I think it's come off the Barnet defender.
See, for me, the flight of the ball changes when it goes towards either Cheek or the defender, so
but
somebody
the defender
has touched
sticks
it.
His leg out as well,
but then if it's on target and it touches the defender and takes Nick off the defender, it's show me his goal anyway, right?
That's what I mean.
However,
that's what I'm hinting at.
It's
but
inconclusive. I think Cheek might have got a touch. So you did a Twitter poll. So the whole backstory about this is I got a message from Omar when he was on his way back after the game, basically saying that it's his goal and Michael Cheek has admitted it, which we later found out to not be true. And then we received several different versions of the footage, as you've alluded to there, Josh. And there was a Twitter poll, wasn't there? What were the results of the Twitter poll? Can you remember?
Oh, wait, hang on.
We're going to get it up.
Because I don't want to cause any
Do we
any
have,
drama.
On this podcast, do we have a drum roll sound effect? Because now that would be perfect.
Do you know what we should do? Oh, hang
we
on.
Really should have a drum roll.
Hang on, let me...
So there was a poll as to whose goal this was. We put it out to you, the supporters, and the results were...
Hang on, I'm still...
We're just waiting here. We are up to speed with everything and...
Omar.
I think the result of the poll was that it was Cheek's goal.
Well, that was the result, but how much did he win?
By how much?
That's what I'm trying to find out.
I'd be interested to hear from people behind the goal. Obviously, you've got a good view of it.
Yeah.
Big thank you to Paul Crawley for sending in the video from behind the goal.
Yeah, I was going
to
say that was the
that's probably the best angle. The best angle of it. The actual broadcast angle wasn't as conclusive, was it?
No. Hang on.
We're still trying
to get
this. We're nearly there, everybody.
I'm scrolling.
People will just be skipping past this bit in the podcast now.
I don't know. Maybe they'll want to know the percentage. Oh, hang on.
Here we go.
Michael Cheek. Oh, hang on. Do a drum roll, Matt. Omar Shomi got 25% of the votes, which means 75%
went to
the Cheekster.
Well, it's Michael Cheek's goal then.
It's Michael. I mean, he celebrated it, didn't he?
He did celebrate it.
We can't take that away from him.
Omar Shomi's words were, now I'm going to do a you, Josh, here, and I'm going to get the actual message up that he sent me.
Oh, okay, go on.
He says, let's have a look. He's even admitted it. Just because you celebrate louder doesn't mean you get it. With two laughing emojis.
Oh.
So he's given a little dig to his teammate there, but the two of them I know were together at the time and having a bit of a laugh about it. But yeah, it's all in good faith, but it looks like the fans believe it's Michael Cheek's goal. So there we go. Moving on anyway. That was a good away point. However, that said, Laurie Walker pulling off several good saves in that game, keeping Bromley from scoring more right at the end, Josh. That chance, Jude Arthurs, and then Michael Cheek with the follow-up. You thought that was going to be it.
I thought that was in.
Do you remember when Barnet played here back in October, they scored two injury time goals to win the game?
Yeah,
I thought
they did.
We might have got our revenge there, but it wasn't to be.
Good goalkeeper.
Very, very good goalkeeping from Laurie Walker. You have to give him credit, certainly, for keeping the score down there. A good weekend for our loanees, by all accounts.
Starting with George Alexander at Slough Town.
He only scores hat-tricks and above. What a player.
Unbelievable. Four goals. I think they won 6-1, was it?
6-2, I think, yeah. Oh, it might have been 6-1. Yeah, you might be right. 6-1
against Chippenham Town at home. And yeah, obviously, George scored a hat-trick against Slough for Welling in the first half earlier on in the season. And then he scored four goals in one game.
Incredible from George Alexander. And of course, he signed a new deal, so he'll still be.
I keep forgetting
next season
how young he is, though.
Yeah, he's 21.
Like, I know people go, why is he playing for Slough and Welling? And so, but he's young.
He's got so much time left in his career.
Yeah.
And he's absolutely banging in the goals for those two clubs. So fair play to him.
But it wasn't just him.
Sol
Kader
got another for VCD. He's loving life there, isn't he?
And it wasn't just those two.
There's another one.
David Smith.
Ah, with a goal for Hastings.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. Well done to the loanees. That is a pretty good weekend's work. And not to forget the likes of Marcus Sabler at Cray Wanderers, who are on a really good run of form at the moment. And best of luck to our loanees. All of the players themselves are doing really well, and they'll come back better players for it as well. Moving on then to the visit of Boreham Wood on Monday. We're going to catch up a little bit more with one of our guests here in the studio later on in the podcast on this game. But it was a bit of a crunch tie, Josh. We looked at Barnet. That was a 6-pointer. This was even more so.
Yeah, I was a bit nervous going into it, to be fair. But I thought we played all right.
1-1 the result in the end. I think the first half, Boreham Wood started the better side. Probably Bromley's goal, maybe slightly against the run of play, but really well finished by Michael Cheek. And then, you know, the celebrations are still going as Boreham Wood went down the other end and Liam Lovu equalises.
I mean, it was a good goal, but the timing of it was unbelievable, wasn't it? I think I was still, you know, tweeting out the goal. I was still like, I was trying to, you know, describe the goal, and then I deleted the whole thing because Boreham Wood went up and scored. I was like, I can't. Can't do that, can I?
Unbelievable. But yeah,
a good goal, though.
Two good goals, really. Yeah. Both goals were good, and both teams were good. I think Bromley actually were the better team in the second half, and although neither goalkeeper really was tested very much, you could see that Boreham Wood were more happy with the point than Bromley were.
But
given, Josh, that results went Bromley's way elsewhere, it's kind of as you were after that.
Yeah, I think going into it, I know Andy said as well, I think a draw and a win would have, you know, set us up really well. But yeah, I don't think we were looking for two draws. But then obviously Eastleigh dropping points as well, it sort of, you know, is giving us that advantage again going into Saturday. And then obviously Eastleigh lost again in midweek to Gateshead. But yeah, It was a good point in the end, I think, considering it's two really good teams. Obviously, we're coming up against two more good teams in good form, but yeah, no, I'll take a draw. And we should have scored late on then as well.
Yes.
Adam Marriott at the end.
Yeah.
Happy birthday,
right.
Mazza.
Happy birthday. 32 years young today. Very happy birthday to the 10 dog of the team. And one of the best natural finishers I've ever seen.
Yeah.
At Hayes Lane. And alongside Michael Cheek, who is the other. Just, yeah, incredible level of strike force we've got here at Bromley FC. Now, moving on then. From that, and we'll talk more about the first team in a moment. It was a good night on Tuesday for the under-23s, Josh.
Yeah, they beat St Albans City 3-2 away from home. Obviously, they've got a little... They usually have like at least a week's break, but now they're doing... I think they're playing again on Tuesday night, so that'll be three games in a week. And yeah, they've won the first one. They've got Met Police tonight in their last home game of the season. So yeah, another good result.
It's fantastic to see. And am I right in saying, Josh, that the under-23s had a really disappointing, quite heavy loss against St Albans earlier in the season? So it's brilliant to go back and win this time.
Yeah, I mean, it's different players involved and stuff, but still it's that psychological thing, isn't it? Some of them will be going back to the place that didn't turn out very well, and obviously they have to put those memories to the back of their mind and overcome what happened before.
Moving back on then, all the best to the under-23s for the rest of the season, for the final home game tonight as well.
Tickets are still on sale for that game.
Just going to say that as well, yes.
Sorry, I got in there.
No, come and join us at Hayes Lane tonight for the under-23s last home league game.
Yeah, £5 for general admission and
great
then
value.
Free for under-12s.
And they play good football, don't they?
They do,
well?
Yeah.
Really
no,
good to watch.
It's been really good.
Just to touch on back in the National League briefly before we move on to one of our favourite segments of the podcast. Scunthorpe United on Monday joined Maidstone United and being relegated from the National League. It's been a really disappointing season for the Iron, who came down from League Two last season, of course. And you've seen it happen before. Club just goes straight down into the National League North. It was York City, I think, before who experienced that. And now there are two more relegation spots, I'd say, up for grabs.
Yeah.
It's not as if teams want to go down, but currently occupying them are Yeovil Town and Torquay United. And Yeovil, 6 points behind Aldershot, who are in 20th. Torquay, only 2 points behind. It's going to be an interesting final few games.
I can't believe Scunthorpe. I know they've had their off-field issues and whatever, but I can't believe it. I genuinely thought they'd come down last season and it'd be a bit like Grimsby. They came down, went straight back up. I thought that they'd be similar. I know, obviously, Wrexham, Notts County, Chesterfield, there's teams sort of similar or better than them, but I'm shocked. I remember watching them in the League One playoffs, and that was 2018. Wasn't even that long ago.
Madness.
And now I'm National League North.
Madness, isn't
it? And being a Lincoln fan myself, we were always like, in recent years, it's like, we need to get to Scunthorpe's level. And now we've just...
Swap places, really. Incredible, isn't it? And like I say, it's not the first time a club has gone straight down, is it?
No, and I mean, like...
You see that Yeovil more than as well. Team bouncing up, don't you, from at the first attempt. And yeah, Yeovil as well. Torquay!
Yeah.
Big clubs.
Yeah.
Big clubs. Incredible. Anyway, just shows how well we're doing, Josh, really. Moving on, we've got a guest who has joined the ranks here on Ravens Weekly recently and is doing a stellar job.
Yeah.
And it's, of course, Sir Roy Oliver.
Do we have a jingle?
We need to get Roy a jingle.
Off, didn't we? So we may have to
improvise one.
Yeah. Do, 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 do.
Do, 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 do. It's Roy Remembers. Do, 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 do. I think that's going to have to do for now. It's 1 out of 10. But here we go. Here's Roy Remembers. And now we're joined by Roy Oliver for another instalment of Roy Remembers. How are you doing this week, Roy?
Very well, very well. I'm very busy, always busy, but I love it because it keeps me active. It keeps me, I'm looking for the word, but it keeps me going and I really do it. And especially during this podcast because a lot of people out there are really interested in the history and bits that they've never even heard about. So that's what I like to dig out, and I've got loads of stuff at home.
You certainly do, don't you? And I believe you got your first bit of fan mail at Barnet Away. You had a couple of people approach you and mention how much they're enjoying Roy Remembers, which is what it's all about.
Absolutely, yeah. And I hadn't met them down here, but they come to quite a lot of the home games, and they've been to one or two of the away games, and they seem to love it very well.
Well, so do we, Roy. Now, I believe everybody who's a fan of Roy Remembers, which will be all of our listeners, have got a special treat today. You've got not one, not two, but three stories to tell us.
Three little stories to tell you, and they're all from the 1890s, so I do remember them. It wasn't 1903.
Well, Roy, the floor is yours. Yeah. Take it away.
Right. So the first one is from, it's in October 1893. And in fact, it's our first ever league game. And I'll read out the story here. It is, here is something for footballers to emulate. And I noticed that the captain had a pardoned look of pride in his eyes while he related to there that it was an incident on the LC and DR on Saturday afternoon, and Bunbury found himself hung midway between Shortlands and Beckenham Junction. After 3 o'clock, learning the cause of the delay, seeing that no hope of getting by time by train, Monsieur Gougon jumped out of the carriage and ran part of the way to Beckenham Junction and hired a cab. And changing clothes on the way, arrived at the ground just as the teams had lined out. And the quote is, "Reader, if ever thou gets into a similar predicament, go and do likewise."
So, that's brilliant.
So if you was playing on a Sunday morning and you was late and you thought, oh, I'm never going to get there, get changed in your car. Or on the bus.
And jump off the train and run the rest of the way.
Yeah. I mean, you imagine trying in an old strong carriage, trying to change his clothes into his football kit.
Incredible. You wouldn't get that nowadays. I think there'd be a big fine if that happened.
Yeah.
Well, that's story number one.
That's story number one. Number two is from 1903. And it's February 1903. And it's got Bromley FC at home and away. Dear sir, I beg to trespass on your space, just a little grumble, and to set the committee of the Bromley Football Club by what they seen give a good team at home as they do away from matches. As I feel that the teams are stronger and simply every case that is a play away and play a better game. So the story is about this guy is having a grumble about and saying, why do we seem to play better away from home than we do at home? Isn't that very true today?
Yes, it's funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is the sort of thing you hear in and around the terraces, around the leagues and home and away, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not much has changed in 120 years.
Yeah, and it's signed off by an old supporter in 1903. So you can only imagine what year... Did he start watching them from 1892?
Wow.
So
one of the very first supporters.
One of the first supporters, yeah. But I thought it was brilliant, like, you know. And I thought, that is so true today.
You can relate to that. All of our fans can relate to that one, definitely.
Yeah. It's brilliant, yeah, because we do. Because at home, the pressure's on you a little bit. Supporters expect you to win and to play brilliant football. And so we know that's not always the case. When you play away from home, players get a bit more freedom to go and express themselves, and they can do their jobs, and they're not expected to win, but as long as they give a good account of themselves and play well, no one grumbles. But yes, it's a very true story today.
Absolutely, yeah. And number three?
And number three is, this is in the Centenary book, and it's a rhyme. And it says, in memory of a sad disaster which befell Craven Rangers when they ran foul of Bromley. And this is the second verse of it. So I'm going to read it all out. It says, on a bright afternoon in the autumn, we journeyed to Mary's Cray, and the boys of that town were eager to enter the field of fray. To us they predicted disaster. The prompts come to be beaten, they cried. But 4-2 showed them the masters, and that's how the wanderers died. And the second third is, how foolish it is to boast about winning, how easy it is to suffer defeat. In the first half, they done the grinning. In the second half, they were beat. Yes, in spite of their roughness and fouling, and such dirty actions they tried, we beat them and gave them a toweling, and that's how the poor lad must have cried.
Wow.
So, I gave this to Marisol, but I don't know how it got omitted. But that's the second third. And what would generally happen is the people would have these memory cards would be called street hawkers, and they would make up two sets of them. So because we beat Cray, they used the one where the wanderers died. If Cray had won, then it would be how the Bromley had died. So they were on a match winning thing, whatever they did. And of course, back in them days, Bromley and Cray games, you just get big crowds of probably a couple of thousand or more.
Wow.
So that's the story about how the Cray Wanderers died, and they must have cried.
I find myself saying every week in this segment, yeah. Wow, it's just, how do you find this stuff? It's incredible.
Well, it's a lot of research, for the centenary book, and I just carried on and carried on.
You certainly have, haven't you?
Yeah.
Well, it's brilliant. This segment is absolutely fantastic. It's little things like that. You're educating both of us. I know that for a fact, and yeah. And all of the people that are listening. And I find it really, really interesting myself. So thank you for that. Just before we finish, we're going to talk a little bit about the supporters' coaches. Now, obviously, with things as they stand, Roy, in the National League table, there is a push for those playoff places. We've got 4 games left of the regular season, 3 of which are away, yeah. 1 of which is at home. We'll talk more about the home match later on. But the 3 away games, supporters' coaches are running to all of them. That's Gateshead this Saturday, the 15th of April, £35 return for what is, I think, our longest journey of the season. It's a 7 a.m. depart. Tuesday, the 18th, Halifax, 12:30 depart for that one, £30 return. And the final game of the National League season, Oldham Athletic away, kick-off 5:30, remember, for that one, and departing at 10:30, £30 return. Roy, you're on every single supporters coach, and it's important that we rally up the support for the coaches and, of course, to get behind the team in these next couple of games.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of us, the regular ones, come on the coaches, but we're looking for more and more people to come and support the team. Down at Maidstone, we had 400 and something people down there, supporters. At Barnet, we had 379. So if some of those people come and say, right, we're going on that coach to Gateshead and then to Halifax and then to Oldham, we can drum up the support because the team needs your support at these games. When we give a good account of ourselves and the supporters are quite vocal and we're enjoying the game, it really does rub off on the team. So it is important that supporters come along to it.
Have you been to all 3 of these grounds before?
Yes, I've been to Gateshead many times by train and by coach.
And how about Halifax and Oldham?
I've been there, yeah. Including last year when it's called off.
At 2:15, when none of us knew anything was wrong before that point. How frustrating.
Yeah.
Of course, Gates said, it's a funny arrangement, isn't it, the ground with the athletics track. You're going to have to shout very loud at the linesman this week, Roy.
Yeah. So I've got a loud hater to speak into. You're quite away from the pitch because it's an athletics track and Brendan Foster used to train there and run there and lots of other athletes because it is an international athletics track, so you're quite away from the pitch, so you have to be quite focal. I mean, 2018 when we got to the semi-final, the trophy, we had a lot of us up there and it was a brilliant day.
There's a great picture of that day, isn't there, with all the supporters in the in the stand celebrating, and it wasn't our last visit there, but it was definitely our most special.
Oh, yeah, brilliant, yeah, because they got relegated after that. So they've come back up again, and they're on a good run of form at the moment, and they won last night. So they've withdrawn well clear of the relegation.
And also, they've got to the FA Trophy final, haven't they?
Yes.
And ironically, against Halifax Town, the two teams we're playing in our next two fixtures will face off at Wembley for the FA Trophy, which we only just returned to Wembley Stadium a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
So, sure to be a good couple of games, Roy. I know you're looking forward to them. And the team have been playing really well recently, unbeaten, on a good unbeaten run. Gateshead on a brilliant run as well. But the team have got to go into it with that belief, haven't they?
Yeah, and as I text on WhatsApp yesterday, Andy sets his team up well away from home. We're hard to beat. We're not pushovers, and we play with a little bit more freedom, I think, away from home. I'm looking for some good positive results.
Well, you can join Roy, you can join myself on the coaches for all three of those away games. Head over to bromleyfc.co.uk and book your seat on the supporters coach. It's sure to be an entertaining final four games, and let's see where it takes us. Roy, thank you very much once again for your time.
You're welcome.
And we'll see you next week.
Indeed.
Well, thank you to Roy for his time once again. It's always a pleasure catching up with one of the greats of the Bromley terraces and stands here at Hayes Lane. He's really part of the furniture. And again, thank you to Roy for his time and efforts with Roy Remembers. And we hope you at home are enjoying that segment of the podcast. We certainly enjoy recording it. Now, it has been a very busy couple of weeks for the Community Trust. It's Community Corner, everyone. There we go. That went swimmingly, didn't it? Anyway, it's been the Easter holidays, and we have had a number of things going on during this period. It all started on the Easter Monday when, before the Boreham Wood game, we hosted our very first ever introductory youth trials in connection with the Bromley FC youth side of the football club. And the Community Trust linked up with them to provide introductory trials for these young children who were looking to potentially play in teams at some point in the future. And it was a great experience for all of those involved. So thank you to everybody for supporting that. And of course, massive thank you, it doesn't get said enough, to all of the coaches, parents, volunteers of the youth section who make all the fantastic work they do in giving these young people a chance in football possible. Just big up to all of them, really. They are fantastic people, and they put in so many hours of work to help these young people in their footballing journeys. And then after that, last week and this week as well, we've had our Easter soccer camps. And we've had around,
I love a soccer camp.
It's incredible, isn't it?
It's to see so the amount good when it comes around. It's so good,
and you can see all the different football kits. Have you spotted any Lincoln kits yet? We've seen quite a few Bromley kits this time, which if you look back a few years ago, it would have been all Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Man United, Chelsea, all of that. Yeah. Now we are seeing Bromley shirts as well, which is brilliant to see. Of course, readily available
it's
in the club
shop. Because
we're
massive.
We are massive. Everywhere we go. There we go. Brilliant. But anyway, we've had 100 children attending on that one every day, which has been phenomenal. And well done to all of the coaches who have helped put that into place. And of course, the Community Trust team as well. And also this week, we've had our holiday activities and food, otherwise known as HAF camps, which are put on in association with Bromley Council and the Bromley Children and Families Forum. And that aims to give children who are on free school meals or pupil premium a free day of football and a free hot nutritious meal. As well as that, we've given them all a Cheekies on Fire t-shirt. We've donated them one of those, and they've all taken home a take and make cake kit as well. Thank you to the Mayor of London's Fund for that as well. So fantastic week for all these young people who really need this support. They've had a talk from a science teacher as well, who's come in and explained to them and done loads of practical experiments. That was great fun. And of course, they've had brilliant football with Coach Stewart and his team out there. So big up to all the coaches.
Big up Coach Stew.
Big up Big Stew.
Big Stew,
as we call him in here. And well done to all of the families and children. And of course, thank you to the Bromley Children and Families Forum and the London Borough of Bromley for enabling us to run what is such a rewarding project and one that's really important for these children and their families as well. And we've really, really enjoyed doing it. It's wonderful to see. Big thank you to Broomfields. Will and the team and Ash down there have been fantastic in preparing these hot meals for these children. What a couple of weeks it's been. Really, really proud of the work that's been done.
Can't wait for the summer one.
Absolutely. So next up, that leads me on to, you've done a lovely flyer for us, Josh. Thank you very much.
That's all right.
The next one is at the end of May. So it's the 30th of May to the 2nd of June. It's a 4-day holiday camp in the summer half term. So do come and join us if you've got a young child who wants to play football aged between 4 and 15. You can book at bromleyfc.org. That is our community website, bromleyfc.org, or follow us at Bromley FC Trust on social media channels. Do get your spaces in early if you'd like to join us for that one, because we've sold out our last few camps and there are a lot of disappointed people who've left it till the last minute and have missed out on a space. So get your bookings in early. Moving on then. After that, let's take a look back at some previous matches against Gateshead. And I know the one that everyone's going to be talking about here, so let's just get it out in the open, is, of course, the FA Trophy semi-finals of 2018. And, of course, we had the fixture here against Gateshead at Hayes Lane, which we won 3-2 in the first leg. And that was a very snowy day, actually. The snow started to come down. I wasn't sure if the game would be carrying on. Josh, I'm sure you've seen that picture of Louis Dennis jumping in the air.
Oh, that's brilliant.
In the snow.
And who took it? Was it Mark?
It might have been Mark. It might have been Ed. I wouldn't want to take the credit away from whoever it was. But whoever it was, it's a phenomenal picture. Dennis, of course, in those days, wearing the number 10 shirt. He is a bit of a thorn in Gateshead's side. He scored quite a few goals against Gateshead in his last spell here at Hayes Lane, and scored in the 1-1 draw here at Hayes Lane earlier this season between the two sides, that one back in October of 2022. What a day the second leg was. I know you weren't there, Josh, but I know you've seen the videos and you can see just what it meant to everyone.
Oh, it's brilliant. I think the video of the celebrations in the changing room after, I think the fire alarm's going off.
Yeah, the fire alarm did go off, yeah.
Brilliant.
It's wonderful to see. And did you see as well, there's a brilliant picture of the fans in the away end that day. There must have been, you know, it was a really good amount of fans, a couple hundred at least, who've made that long, long journey to back Neil Smith at the time and the players. And of course, one player that is still in the side today, although having departed for a couple of years, is Louis Dennis. And he'll no doubt be fighting for a starting place at the Gateshead International Stadium tomorrow. And like I said, he's got a very good goal scoring record against Gateshead and has actually scored, I believe, 3 times at the Gateshead International Stadium in the past few years. So he will certainly be one that they want to keep an eye on. And I'm sure Gateshead fans from across the years will remember. There's another time I'd like to pick up on a trip to Gateshead. Gateshead Stadium is quite quirky, isn't it? It's an athletics ground, quite a famous athletics ground, actually. You're quite far away from the pitch. There are a few empty athletic stands behind the goals at either end. We played them in the same year as the FA Trophy, the same season in the league. We went up there, went 1-0 down. Danny Johnson, the former Gateshead Leighton Orient striker, I think he's playing in Scotland now. He scored the opening goal, and then we got a Jack Holland was playing up front as he used to in those days, and he got tackled by Scott Barrow, and it was a fantastic tackle, brilliant challenge, and we got a penalty for it in the 85th minute. Who else but Louis Dennis steps up and scores it. 84 minutes, 1-1, game on. 93rd, 92nd minute, Adam Mecky's got the ball out wide on the left, swings across in with his left boot. Brett Williams is there, charging into the edge of the six-yard box, heads it down into the turf, into the back of the net. Pandemonium in the away end and in the press box, I must say. And then Brett Williams has just gone over to this empty stand and just had his arms out like that, as if he's celebrating in front of a capacity crowd. It was absolutely brilliant. Not that the Gateshead fans were too happy that day with the dodgy penalty that we got, but a fantastic away win that day. And Josh, we alluded to it earlier, it's going to be really tough, actually. Gateshead have really come into some fantastic form. They were battling relegation. They're now comfortably safe. 14th in the table. That is 11 points behind Bromley, having played a game less. And I believe they are the second most informed team in the National League behind Wrexham.
They've been on brilliant form. I think a few people probably tipped them to go down this season. They've just been on such good form over the past couple of months. And yeah, it's gonna be tough.
Well, let me tell you, the last time they lost was the 4th of March against Chesterfield 2-1.
Wow.
They've drawn two games since then. Actually, three games if you include the FA Trophy, which they then won on penalties. They've won all the rest, and that included something that you'll hear from Andy Woodman very shortly on, a 5-2 victory away to Eastleigh earlier this week on Wednesday. Now, the only benefit about that is the fact that they've had to travel that length of journey midweek prior to playing us, whereas we've had a Tuesday off or a Wednesday off. But it's going to be a mega tough game. They all are now, Josh, aren't they? These four remaining games are all going to be very difficult for different reasons.
The thing is, it's like last season, we know when we got to Wembley, obviously results in the league sort of, they did dip. And I personally thought when they went to Eastleigh, it would be a bit like, you know, when we went to King's Lynn.
Yes.
It was just one of those, wasn't it? Like, got to Wembley, you're safe.
Didn't want to get injured, yeah.
And you just... Yeah, you just play it safe. You don't want to get injured for Wembley. And they just absolutely crushed them.
Yeah, they did. And Andy Woodman and Brandon Daly were down there watching.
They were, yeah.
It's going to be a tough game. Having said that, in one way, it's done us a favour because Eastleigh are the team directly above us. And that lead has now been cut to 2 points. And we have a game in hand, of course.
Oh, yeah.
You'd rather have the points on the board, of course. But we do. We are in that position. And big thank you to Gateshead for that result. But we'll be wanting to get one past them tomorrow. It's not going to be an easy few days coming up. While we're at it, Josh, Halifax are on the same points as Gateshead in the National League, one place below them in 15th, with Gateshead having a superior goal difference. That's another side who've just come into form all of a sudden, beating Wrexham, get into the FA Trophy final, ironically against Gateshead. Our next two opponents are the FA Trophy finalists. It's going to be another one, isn't it? And it's another long trip up north in the space of 4 days.
I mean, they've just beaten Wrexham as well at home, and they'll be confident that they'll beat us. And obviously, last season we went there, should have been on a Saturday, but we won't talk about that. And
no, not again.
Yeah, it was a Tuesday night, and they won 1-0. We didn't look like getting anything out of that one, and yeah, they'll be looking to do exactly the same. So, I personally think these two games coming up are harder than Boreham Wood and Barnet.
I think you could be right there. The form of the two teams is definitely better than the other two, despite the league position being in reverse. And FC Halifax Town will warm up for that game with a home visit of Maidstone United tomorrow, who, of course, already relegated from the National League, but will be playing with a bit of freedom and a lack of pressure. So who knows what will happen there. And, of course, we are away to Gateshead. Space is still available on the supporters coach for Gateshead and Halifax, and of course Oldham Athletic on the 29th of April. So do join us for those. You can get your tickets.
The thing is, it could be a really, really good game. And I mean, if we win, results go our way elsewhere.
You don't want to miss it.
And it's one of those that if we win and it's a really good game and we've moved back into the playoff places and it's like, oh, I wish I went to that.
Yeah, don't miss out.
Don't
take the chance.
Don't be that person.
You just never know what Bromley are going to deliver. Don't miss out on hopefully something that might make history. But anyway, we'll see closer to the time, of course. Tomorrow's result will give us a good indication.
Saturday away, 3 o'clock game.
It is, because, of course, Oldham Athletic has been moved to 5:30, so a 10:30 departure for the supporters coach for that one. 7 a.m. departure tomorrow for the supporters coach to Gateshead. You can still get spaces on it now, and a 12:30 departure on Tuesday for the supporters coach to Halifax. Space is still available on all three. Head to bromleyfc.co.uk to book your space and come
and
along
the coaches,
and join us.
The coaches are good.
They're good fun, aren't they?
They are good, and it's a mixture of ages. Like, I know we post on social media and it's like certain age groups and whatever, but it is a complete mixture of ages on that coach, isn't it?
So, and the usual suspects.
Yeah.
As well.
Not mention any names.
No, not
David Melhuish.
Paul Richer. Yeah.
John Holmes.
Brilliant. It's always an entertaining ride, isn't it?
It is.
But anyway, do join us for those. Let's crack on with our two studio guests then, shall we, Josh? And first up, it's the gaffer, Andy Woodman. So we're joined by manager Andy Woodman here for the next part of the podcast. Andy, thank you, as always, for joining us. We're going to talk about the Easter weekend. It's a unique part of the season with the games on Friday and Monday. It was two games against teams that are currently in playoff spots and two good performances overall. What were your take on the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, we played two teams above us in the playoff positions, which we're chasing. And yeah, I thought there was two different games of football, to be honest. We played at Barnet. I thought we was really good that day. We'd done everything other than get the second goal. I thought some of our play was excellent, and it tells you something when the opposition goalkeeper gets man of the match. So even though we were disappointed not to get the win, it was still another point, which could end up being an important point. And against a good Barnet team. And then we've got the tough game against Boreham Wood on Monday, which, look, Boreham Wood are a tough team to play anywhere. Luke spent, you know, majority of his career in this league, so he knows how to set a team up. He set them up well. They don't give you much. They're pretty solid, pretty resolute. And my only real disappointment, I mean, it was a horrible windy day on a dry pitch. But my real disappointment was we got the goal and we just didn't have a little 5 or 10 minute spell. Because I always believe once you get that goal, then the team's got to then try to come out of you a little bit after a period of time. And then gaps open up and spaces open up. We conceded so quickly, which was a real disappointment. A little bit of misfortune. But look, let's not take nothing away. It fell to the guy and he smashed it in from 20 yards. So, yeah, and then it became a cagey game, didn't it? You know, second half, I felt we was pushing and pushing. But you're always on the edge of your seat, hoping you don't lose it. But we have to keep pushing because we've got to get in the playoff position. So two contrasting games against teams, you know, a little bit above us. And you could argue we haven't lost any ground on them other than we've just lost a couple of matches to close the gap.
And the key thing being, it means the unbeaten run goes on and it's a good little patch of form, probably at the right kind of time as well.
Yeah, I mean, it grows in confidence. You know, we're a difficult team to beat and we're a hard-working team, as we all know. And we just need a little bit more quality in the final third, whether it be a pass, a cross, you know, whatever we're doing in that final third. We just need to give that little bit of coolness and then that little bit of quality just to finish. But we've been creating chances. I'd be more worried if he wasn't creating chances. That would be my main concern. So the team's in a good place, in my opinion. And, you know, we're pushing hard.
Someone else is in a good place is Michael Cheek. 4 goals in 3 games. And he is in some good form too.
Yeah, Michael Cheek, isn't he? You know, we could always moan about he doesn't do this, he can't do that. But when you actually look at Michael Cheek play week in, week out, I mean, he really does get a lot of sort of physical contact that I don't think he always gets the best protection from referees. And I think they do that because he's just a big guy. But he gives us everything every game. And then for him to score, I mean, he always gets his tally into double figures. So for him to score was great and to keep him sort of on form. So, yeah, really chuffed for Cheeky. He's a player that we all love and he's an important part of this football club.
And next up it's Gateshead away on Saturday and you went to the game last night. How was it?
Yeah, well, I went to the game. The conditions were horrendous. It was a real windy, blustery, horrible night down at Eastleigh. So straight away... Is that the missus, mate?
It is, actually, yeah.
It probably is.
Sorry about that, guys.
And I always felt that those conditions... I don't know whether this is just my mindset, but I always feel that the Northern boys sort of love the old horrible weather games. I thought, this will suit them. And it was a good game of football, you know. There wasn't a lot in it. You know, first half, but Gates had scored. And then they come back easily. And I thought, at that point, I thought Eastleigh might just kick on. But second half, Gates were too much for them. And they really are a good team. They set them up well. They know what they're doing. So fair play to Mike Williamson, who I know from Newcastle, and Robbie Elliott. They've got that team firing on all cylinders. So they're a good team. And they've got goals in them and they've got good movement. So... be a tough game up there for sure.
And in your career, you've spent a good chunk of time at Newcastle. Are you looking forward to heading back up north?
Have you had a drink, man? Have you trying those cocktails?
We'll talk about that more in a minute, won't we? Yeah. Stuff's going all over the place.
We'll let that out of the bag in a minute, shall we, Josh?
Oh, that's brilliant.
I spent a lot of time in Newcastle and I class it as a home, really. This is home for me down south. But that is like a real place that I class as home. My children pretty much grew up there. My son had an affinity with the club for 10 years, played there. And I've got loads of friends up there, and I always say you won't meet a nicer breed of person than a Geordie. They're just brilliant. So I'm looking forward to going back there. I'm hoping to go back there and come away with something. But it'd be nice, you know. Robbie Elliott and Mike Williamson are two people that I've worked with at Newcastle, so it'd be nice to see them for 90 minutes. We'll lock on, but after, it'd be good to have a chat with them. But yeah, it's always nice to go. I always like going across and seeing the Angel of the North. I do sort of feel a sense of pride that I worked for the football club there and spent a lot of my life with my family up there.
Ironically, the two teams we're playing next, Gateshead and Halifax, will face off in the FA Trophy final, and both of them have hit a good period of form. We're also in good form, so there should be a good couple of games of football at hand.
Yeah, I've had this said to me a lot. Oh, so-and-so's at form, so-and-so's at form, so-and-so's at form. Well, normally the teams at the top do it form at this stage, you know. That's why they're up there. And we've hit our little bit of form. So it's four games, four massive games, which, you know, there was nine. Now we're down to four. And we've just, I've said it all along, you know, you've seen the message, I keep saying it, all around the training ground, on all the TVs. We only have to take care of our business. We don't have to worry about anyone else. We don't have to worry about what anyone else is doing or anyone else. All the time we take care of our business and our results, then we can just crack on. And that's the message to the guys. Let's just take care of our business. Keep doing what we're doing. Keep creating the chances. No one get stressed. No one get uptight. The crowd want us, we're all behind us. Everyone at the club's behind us. And we know we've got to try achieve. It won't be easy, but we've got to make sure that we don't freeze or get any fear in the moment, because I've seen that happen to players, and I don't think we will. I think looking at my group of players, they're relishing the situation we put ourselves in, but that's all we've done is put ourselves in a situation. We haven't achieved anything yet, so that's very important. We don't get too carried away with other people's bad results, and we remind ourselves we've got to take care of our results.
Halifax and Gateshead are pretty much safe now. As a manager, is it harder to play against teams that sort of have nothing to play for?
That's a good question, really. It can be sometimes. And also we've had the other side of the coin where we had a Wembley final and we had our players all kind of protecting themselves a little bit or not wanting to get a big injury, a hamstring now at this stage or anything like that. So it's not... they're going into territory now, and I don't wish this upon them. I must make that clear. But they're going into unknown territory now where it doesn't matter what you do as a manager, your players will have one eye on that Wembley final, because it's a massive day, not just for them, for their parents, for their grandparents. We've been there, guys. I mean, last year we had a team that I just couldn't work it out. I couldn't get them to just go the extra yard because they had this Wembley final banked. So they're now going into that territory now where none of those players will want to get an injury that keeps them out of probably the biggest game of their careers. So it'd be interesting. We're not going to play on that, though. We're not going to rely on that because, you know, they're professional footballers. We're going to, you know, just make sure that we really know what we're doing and what we're about and stick to what we're about and trust the process. I always say, let's trust the process that we put in place. And if we execute the strategy we put in place, then, yeah, we'll be there or thereabouts.
And another supporters coach going on Saturday and Tuesday. What message have you got for the fans?
Well, first and foremost, thank you. Because it's not cheap, to have a day off work and travel up the country and all that comes with it, programs and food, etc. And also, you know, we do appreciate it. I say it all the time, and I looked at Eastleigh last night. There was fans that travelled down from Gateshead. I mean, that's some journey, and our fans are now going up to Gateshead. So yeah, we appreciate it. We hope we can do you proud. We will be trying our hardest. I think you know that. We never not give it everything. And let's all enjoy the ride and get behind the boys, because they're going to need us all, you know, and we're going to need to really get behind these group of players.
Brilliant. Thank you, Andy.
Any news in Brimfields at the moment? I've heard there's a few cocktails coming out.
I'll leave that to Matt, I think.
All right. Go on. I walked back into the office, through the double doors, had Brimfields cocktails thrusted at me. I'm part of the taste test, apparently, which I've done, and I have to say... They're fantastic. Well, apart from that, they are brilliant.
What's your favourite one?
Purple Rain.
Purple Rain. Purple Rain. You've heard it here first.
Was fantastic.
The new cocktails at Broomfield.
But they're all good. And there are some Bromley themed ones as well, which really excited the long term Bromley fan.
We haven't got like one named after me again, because we had the Woody hot dog, which I got to be honest, I got a bit of stick in my household. You know, I mean, I've been named a lot of things. I mean, in my family, they called it a Woody Wiener, which is a bit of a worry. So I hope none of these cocktails are named after me, Matt.
We'll have to wait and see. Yeah. You can catch that on next week's episode.
I must just have a mention to a gentleman who came up to me in the bar Saturday. He said, could I mention Orpington Rovers, who have got to a final, I think he said. And I did promise him that I'd say good luck. And, you know, I'm not sure if they're an over-50s team or something like that. But anyway, I did say I'd mention to him, and he was a very, very nice man. And if I have got that right, good luck, Orpington Rovers.
Call the Rovers.
Brilliant. That's my end. Good luck, Orpington.
I've probably got it completely wrong, because you know I love with names and names and remembering things. But yeah, let's hope we can have a great weekend. And then look, we're going to enjoy the situation we put ourselves in as a football club right to the end. And if we can create another bit of history, then brilliant.
Andy, thanks so much for your time, as always.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure to sit down with Andy, and quite a bit of fun that one.
It was good.
It was brilliant. And a big thank you to Andy for his time, and best of luck to him and the team for the upcoming four matches. And someone else who we're wishing the best of luck to is defender Callum Reynolds, who has been a consistent performer in the Ravens backline this season, having signed last summer after he left Dagenham and Redbridge. And we had the absolute pleasure, didn't we, Josh, of catching up with him. What a top man he is.
Oh, he's brilliant. He's so good.
And I think this interview showcases his personality quite well, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Right, without any further delay, let's go for it. Here's Callum Reynolds, everyone.
Yeah? Okay. Strings and the cymbals. Royal Opera House. Okay.
Take it away.
I'm the FC podcast today. I'm here with Matt, and we're in a green room.
Woo!
And Josh is here on the decks.
I am, yeah.
He's not been gym because he's got no pecs.
In the house.
Oh, no.
Oh.
I'm not having that.
Oh. Sorry.
This is a professional podcast, and we're getting out
with that.
I'm getting abused about being drunk. You're getting abused about that.
Yeah, he was doing cocktail tests.
Literally walked into the office, thrusted Broomfield's cocktails.
Today?
I had to try each one, yeah.
Today?
Yeah, seriously, yeah, about an hour ago. Yeah.
This is a nice setup, isn't it?
It's lovely.
We've only get used to this podcast live.
We've only had this for a few weeks.
Do you know what? This is really weird, because the first player I ever interviewed was Callum Reynolds.
Yeah, I remember. Barnet.
Yeah. I was at Barnet. Work experience. Notts County away.
Look, now you're here, so you moved up in the
Reynolds
world.
Reynolds scored, got man of the match.
Yeah. Did you miss a wedding as well?
Yeah.
I remember.
Because the late kickoff, yeah.
Yeah.
So I could have got back for it, and then the kickoff got moved to late.
Oh, no.
So I missed it. So yeah, I dedicated it. Yeah, because when... So the geezer come up, the BT guy, and was like, oh, you're winning a match, you're going to interview after. And I'm standing there with Sim, the other lad who scored, and they said he got man of the match, and I was like, you just said I did.
Yeah.
And if I didn't say anything, that bit was live. And then when they were talking at the side of the pitch, I just ran over and interrupted them, and I was like, yeah, I actually got man of the match. I want to say, dedicated to my friends getting married.
You were on the live TV?
Yeah.
Oh, that is brilliant.
I went to like the manager, and I was like, oh, I just want to say, I got man of the match.
That is brilliant.
Not him.
I wish I
could
have seen
it. So I'm dedicating it to my friends who got married today.
That's
brilliant. Make the wedding.
To be fair, if you're going to miss it, that is one way to make up for it.
Yeah.
That is decent.
Right. Let's get into it.
Yeah.
It's time to address the most important question. How was Peter Rabbit Trail yesterday?
I'll be completely honest with you. I had a great time. It was good fun. But the signpostage was not very clear. So we got there early, 11 o'clock slot. Got there about 20 to 11. Asked someone where to go. And they said, oh, go up past the train station, turn left. And there's a bakery where it starts. And I'm like, all right. Okay, so we've walked back up. Considering I've got the pram and my little one who doesn't walk fast. We walked back up there. We've gone where she said, station, turn left. No bakery. And walked down the road, looping back. And I'm like, no, this is a shambles. Like, we need to go back and ask. But this time it's like 3 minutes past 11. So I'm like, I'm trying not to lose my head, because I know my missus is going to lose her head. Gone back, found the same girl. She goes, oh, yeah, it's the road before the train station, Floral Street. Right at the end, Chestnut Bakery. I was like, why don't you just tell me that first time? So we got there, we missed a start. But then they're running around like fast. I'm like, my 2-year-old can't walk. So I just picked her up. We were just jumping around. They were like, can you hurry up? I was like, just get off my back. I've got a 2-year-old, just having a great time. I'm having a good time. But so in the end, it worked out good fun. So yeah, I'd give it a good 8 out of 10.
That's experience.
He's recommended it.
Organisations 6. Maybe even a 5.
So if anyone wants to know what footballers get up to on their days off, there you go. Peter Rabbit Trail.
Yeah, this was an extension of Luna's second birthday, so this was one of the presents.
Brilliant. Oh, bless her.
And she loved it. She loved it.
That's what matters, eh?
Yeah, that's
if
amazing.
She's happy,
thing.
I'm happy.
Yeah.
There we go.
So, yeah.
Okay, right. On to football. Do you know what?
This is why we need to do the cow, the cat in the hat.
To be fair, Callum did suggest vocal warm-ups, which myself and Callum did. Josh opted not to, and that's what happened.
And there we go. And now I'm just... Okay. On a serious note, how have you found life at Hayes Lane?
I come in here, didn't know anyone. I knew Billy Bingham from when under 16 to when on trial at Palace for a couple of months and he was there. So when I say I knew him, I played against him a few times, but in terms of that, obviously Cousins left. I played with him before, but he'd left. So I was going into a new dressing room, didn't really know anyone, which was quite refreshing in football because you normally know someone you've played with them before. But now the lads took me in well. Like a great bunch of boys here. It's hard to get that in football. So that's been good. And yeah, season's gone in a flash, really, when you think about when I joined to now. But it's been good. I've played quite a lot of games, and I feel like I've played pretty consistently well this season. I think we've been unfortunate. Key injuries probably have affected our league position, mainly the goalkeeper, obviously. Cooks was a big miss. But 4 games to play, and we're still in with a chance of getting into the playoffs, which was a target before the season started. So, yeah. Could be in a worse position, so yeah, it's okay. But now, on the whole, I've enjoyed it, especially when I'm on the pitch.
I think you're one of the happiest people around the place, one of the nicest people in football, genuinely. How do you find being around this environment on a day-to-day basis with the likes of us, staff behind the scenes, to the players, to the management? And I guess it's quite different to some of the clubs you might have been at before.
Yeah, of course, there's a lot of staff and players that interact with each other on a daily basis, whereas sometimes you might only see them on a match day. And if you're involved, you don't even see them on a match day. So there's a lot of staff in clubs that you don't really get to know and meet. But yeah, like you said, the boys, seeing the boys every day and the staff, and you can tell what the chairman's doing. Everyone's working with the same sort of goal, is to progress and improve and get better. And everyone's on board with that, which helps. Definitely, if you want to be successful, like he has been away from football. And we were just talking before about when Bromley got promoted, same year I was at Bournemouth, we got promoted. And I think both clubs have probably gone on from strength to strength from that. And I don't think there's too many that you can say have come up and established themselves at this level and then look to push on again. So... the boys make it a good environment to be around every day, which makes it easier because a lot of boys travelling from quite far as well. But once you're in the building, it's an enjoyable environment.
You've always been one that's willing to volunteer your time to get involved with the community side of the club, which is obviously very much appreciated. And actually, you got involved with judging the winner of a competition to design a reading hut at a parish primary school. How have you found getting involved in that side of things?
Yeah, it was nice. It was nice to go along. Something that I'm pretty interested in as well. I enjoy reading. I try and read every day if I can and when I can. So it was something that I took a keen interest too, but I was surprised as well, the level of the designs that the kids were doing, especially for the age group that they are. But no, I enjoyed doing stuff in the community. Like you said, it's getting the community involved in the club as well, which the club try and do, not just on the football pitch, but away from it, which helps build up a fan base, because the more support you get, it definitely helps on a match day. If you've got sort of a few thousand people behind you, it can give you that extra kick or bit of energy when you need it, as opposed to playing in like a few hundred people. It's, you kind of got to generate your own atmosphere and can be tough sometimes. So yeah, looking to do stuff in the community is something that I enjoy doing because I'm in a privileged position, so anywhere I can help, yeah, I like to do it.
Let's look back on your career, and I think your Twitter bio pretty much explains it. You started in non-league to the Premier League and then back again with no in between. You spent the early days at Portsmouth when they were in the Premier League. How was that for you?
Yeah, unreal. Unreal. I remember I was at Rushden and Diamonds, who don't even exist anymore. I signed for them. It seems to be a theme. I signed for clubs that just get relegated from League 2 to this league. But I signed an apprenticeship there when they were League 2, but they got relegated. I did 1 year there. Started off great, 16-year-old, broke into the first team, like got on the bench. First game I was on the bench, they got slapped 4-0. And on the Monday, the manager got sacked. I rang my dad, I was like, it's over. That season we had four managers for the first team, so that was a nice eye-opener going into the professional world of football. And then at the end of the season, wasn't really involved, the fourth manager, I don't even know who it was at that point. And I rang Paul Hart, who was the manager originally. He'd got a job down at Portsmouth as the head of the academy, and I just rang him for some advice because I didn't know what I was doing in the football world, from starting the season well to the end of it, being back with the youth team, wasn't where I wanted to be. And his advice, I didn't have an agent, he said, go home with your parents and ask for a pro contract or ask to leave. So I was like, okay. Hung the phone up. He rang me back 2 minutes later and said, look, what if I could bring you to Portsmouth? If that's something you'd be interested in. And I was like, yeah, that sounds good. No, no, he's in the Premier League. He said, look, I can't make any promises, but I'll see what I can do. Make some phone calls and I'll give you a call back. So I was like, all right. He goes, but just keep it under your hat. Like, tell your parents, like, but just keep it quiet. So they hung the phone up and I just rang all my mates. So I was like, I'm going to the Premier League. Nothing was sorted. But yeah, no, he came through. I met him with my dad. They paid some conversation. They took me, Hugo Udogie, who was here before, and a lad called Paris Cowan-Hall, who played for Millwall, funnily enough, as well, in his career. And yeah, we all went down to Portsmouth, and it was just incredible. Probably the best time to be at the club ever. They won the FA Cup in the first year. They was in UEFA Cup, Europa League second year. We played AC Milan at Fratton Park. I got one of Kaká's shirts, got him to sign it. I was working as like a kit boy on duty, like youth team jobs. I got pictures of Ronaldinho, Shevchenko, like it was madness. And then even in the third year when they got relegated, we got to the FA Cup final, which is crazy really when you look at it, when you look back at it. I remember it was a horrible final because I support Chelsea as well. Yeah, and it was Pompey v Chelsea.
Ouch.
I think it was just 1-0, Drogba free kick. And it was just like a bittersweet day because I knew Pompey were getting relegated and it was kind of the end of, I think I knew then it was the end of my time at the club. But to play and train with Champions League winners, full international players, some of the players were a joke, and to be working with them like most days was invaluable experience. Like, I feel lucky and privileged that I've been able to experience the top level, really, outside Champions League places. That was as best as you could get then. UEFA Cup and FA Cup winners. And if you just look, I think players that left there, the midfield, Lassana Diarra went to Real Madrid, Kevin Prince-Boateng went to AC Milan, and Sully Montari went to Inter Milan. So that kind of gives you the caliber of players that were there at the time. But yeah, just great memories there, great memories.
And after Portsmouth, you spent the next part of your career in non-league. How was it for you to adjust from being in an environment like Portsmouth to going to Basingstoke and Borehamwood and, you know, spending the rest of your career, or not the rest of your career, but your career up until now in non-league?
It was mad. I remember I was on loan at Luton and I got called up for the England C squad. We played Hungary away in Budapest, and the morning of the game we trained and I'd done something to my knee and I just thought, I won't swear, but it wasn't good. But I thought, I knew I was starting. I'm thinking, I'm going to start for my country. I'm not going to say anything. Yeah. Played however long I played, probably 65, 70 minutes. And then he made some changes. And from that, just this knee injury, like, I was getting this pain. But I never told anyone. I broke my foot in training, which was a separate thing back at Luton. Loan was finished there. I went back to Portsmouth. It weren't until I had the third scan where I saw that I broke my foot. Whilst I was off, my knees kind of recovered. And when I come back, the pain was there again. But at this point, Pompey were on the slide. They were probably going to get relegated. A few young lads had started making their debuts, and I'm thinking, just get in a squad. Get a Premier League shirt with your name on. But the pain was just mental. I was getting home in the evenings. I couldn't get off the sofa. I couldn't walk up and down the stairs. I was in agony. And it got to a point where I just couldn't train anymore. My training levels had dropped. So I'm thinking, I'm never going to get picked like this. So I better tell the physio. Went for a scan, ultrasound on both my knees. And again, I'm not allowed to swear on here, but the doctor looked at it and said, oh, sugar, in a bit more blunt terms. And I'm thinking, doctors aren't supposed to say that at any time, let alone to me. And I never got back to full fitness from it. I didn't know what to do. I was doing everything in the gym and rehab, but I remember speaking to, name dropping here, I was speaking to Peter Crouch, I think, because he said at Liverpool, Gerrard used to have it, and he'd just be in agony after every game. He'd hardly train, and then he'd just play on a Saturday. And I'm like, that's the captain of Liverpool. My contract's up in about 3 months. I think someone said the same about Shawcross at Stoke. And I'm like, he's the captain of Stoke. I'm a kid here trying to get a contract. I can't even train 2 days in a row. I basically retired from football. I couldn't play for 2 days in a row. So I'm thinking, I can't go on trial anywhere. And I kept going back after the season had finished. They told me I was getting released. And I kind of didn't care. I wasn't upset. When I was younger, I remember crying after Palace and that. And I kind of accepted it. And looking back, I probably should have thought it a bit more and said, give me 6 months to get fit and then see where we're at. But just was what it was. I kept going back there for rehab. I was staying with someone down there at the time. And they'd had enough of me and I'd had enough of them. But because their duty of care, and eventually a new physio came in and was like, look, you're going to get injections. It's going to sort you out short term. And I was like, yeah, just do anything you can. And they worked, to be fair, for a while. Ended up going to Basingstoke because I'd been there on loan before for the rest of the season. And then I played a trial game and I ended up signing for Tamworth, which is where I know who's the physio from over 10 years ago. They were in this league at the time. It's just been a roller coaster, really. I went on a couple loans there, done really well, scored 3 goals in a month on loan at Corby, got recalled, never played. Ended up on loan at Boreham Wood and moved back home, played there. And I just ended up just done out. I've not had an agent earlier in my career, which might have helped. But I had a good time there. We got promoted as captain, stayed in the National League, which was massive. Then moved to Aldershot for a couple of years. Again, we got promotion. We got in the playoffs twice, really punching above our weight. So there was only 5 spots back then as well for the playoffs. Then signed for Barnet. They'd just been relegated, so I signed for Barnet. Had a couple of years there. COVID come and obviously messed up the second year we got into the playoffs, but it just got a bit, things just got a bit messy there. Then had 2 years at Dagenham, and then now I'm here a year at Bromley, and I've just seemed to be floating around the National League forever. Like you said, non-league to the Premier League, back to non-league with no in between. But Maybe one day. I've not given up on the dream, but we'll see. Football's a funny game, so we'll see what happens.
And looking back on your career, what is your highlight?
Definitely the promotion final. Winning that at home as a captain. And I didn't realise till about, I don't know how long after, because I celebrated for quite a long time. But I saw a match report and saw that I got man of the match, which was one, I pride myself on my performance, but to get that recognition, especially in the biggest game of the season, that was huge. And to lift the trophy as a captain, I remember someone speaking to me after it happened, because I remember a few older lads crying and stuff, and I was like, why are you crying? We've just been promoted. And he was at the end of his career, he was like, I've never been promoted. And then someone who was a captain said, look, like not many people get promoted, but to do it as a captain and lift the trophy, like, it's special. So that was good, because I kind of embraced the moment a bit more. Because when you win and you do well, you think it's just going to happen all the time, but it doesn't work like that in football. So that was definitely a highlight. Another one was at Barnet, winning third round away at Sheffield United at Bramall Lane. Yeah, that was just a class day. Again, good celebrations. They're probably the biggest two. Obviously, it was massive to get signed a professional contract at a Premier League club as well. But like you said, I'm generally a happy person, so I enjoy a lot of things in football, especially the day-to-day stuff, because it's not always going to be good times. So yeah, enjoy the small wins when they come.
And you mentioned playing for Barnet and Boreham Wood, and obviously we've just played them this weekend. Does it give you that extra motivation when you come up against a former club?
Yeah, definitely. You always want to do well. Not that I really left in sort of bad circumstances with them two clubs in particular. But you do want to impress, kind of be like showing what they're missing in a way. I don't know, I'm quite a relaxed guy. I don't get too emotional when I play football. So I don't really let the emotions get the better of me if it is sort of a big occasion or an ex team. But I definitely do want to do well against them. And again, I've been in this league long enough. Most of the people I play against, half of my mates as well. So I always want to do well against them for bragging rights.
We just talked about it off camera, off mic a minute ago. You must have played against Bromley so many times over the years, right from the Conference South days up until now. And as someone who's on the outside then, that's now on the inside, you can probably appreciate how far this club has come.
100%. I don't think any of the stands were in place when I first played here. And if they were, they didn't look like they do now. Obviously, behind the goal was a massive one. But where the changing rooms are, that's improved itself. But yeah, the infrastructure and the setup of the club, yeah, I've kind of seen like the evolution. Because I come, I see it maybe once a year, and then I don't come back. And every time they've probably added to it. But they've also added on the pitch as well. But knowing how the chairman works, he wants the infrastructure to be right off the field to build success on the field, which some clubs, they just throw money at it on the pitch. Doesn't always work, especially at this level. It's very hard to get out of this league, as you know. But yeah, from when I first played here to now, it's a million miles away. And that's going in the right direction as well.
And we were talking as well, prior to us playing Boreham Wood on Easter Monday, just gone, there was another Boreham Wood fixture that people were thinking about a lot, and that decided the Conference South title in 2014-15. There's been some videos banded about of that day. You were actually playing that day for Boreham Wood.
Yeah, I remember it well. It was Easter weekend, and it was like a title decider. It was almost like the Wrexham Notts County game, if you like, at the weekend. The winner was probably going to go on and win the league. I think at Boreham Wood, I just remember us being ahead and sort of top of the league for a lot of the season. But yeah, we lost to Bromley that day, and it was a penalty. Cookie's younger brother, Anthony, he scored the penalty, and I just remember feeling after, I think it gave Bromley that extra belief to go on and win it, and he just knocked us a little bit. We played on the Monday against Ebbsfleet, and I think we needed to win that, and we didn't. We only got a draw, and yeah, but I do remember the day clearly. I was saying I'm good friends with James Russell still, and it popped up on his Instagram memories the other day. It's actually the picture of the penalty. He's gone in and he's cursing at himself, and Cookie's off celebrating away. And yeah, I remember it well. But luckily we both went up that season. So
I was going to say, it's all worked out because you're here now.
Exactly,
well.
Yeah.
Another connection you've got to Bromley is you are very, very close friends with somebody who's very well liked here. You go with Doji.
Yeah, it's funny. I call him Bob. Because he said he's got about 5-6 names. He reckons he's got some Irish in him. So I call him. No one calls him Bob. No one really calls him Hugo anymore either. He's Emmanuel or Manny. But to me, he's Bob. Yeah, so when I first went to Rushden, he was there. And he was a year above me. So he was like a second year scholar. I was a first year. And he was a man then. He was massive, just this, and a big smile, big laugh. So you can't help but warm to him. And yeah, we got up to all sorts of mischief together there as young trainees. He actually surprised me on my 17th birthday. Driving instructor come up and was like, "Oh, happy birthday! Like, this is your present." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" He was like, "This is your birthday present." I was like, "No, it's not. No one's told me." He was like, "I've organised it with your mum, like, surprise." So that was amazing. Then we both went to Portsmouth. We lived one road away from each other. So again, we carried on our adventures down there. And again, for my 18th birthday, I think he bought a watch that I'd wanted. I saw it in a shop or something down there. And my mum, again, speaking to him behind, like, not behind my back, but in private. So he sorted that. And yeah, so... As soon as I left school, he was someone that became like family straight away, and yeah, we've been like best friends ever since then. And madly enough, we both had a baby on the same day this year in January, his first and my second. And I'm going to meet him at the weekend with the little baby. So yeah, it's a good connection to the club, to someone who's, I mean, you can't help but like him.
Oh, he's very likeable, isn't he?
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. And one other thing as well, we've talked about it, you've spent many years in this league now, in the National League. How do you feel it's changed and evolved in the past few years?
It's definitely got a lot more professional in terms of the setups of the teams, even the fitness levels. Before, when Bournemouth went up, we were still two evenings a week. We had to go 3 days because we were losing late in games, and it was fine margins, but you can see the fitness levels of professional teams. It's got a lot more competitive, but it's the hardest league to get out of because only one goes up automatic. Like, Notts County have got over 100 points this year. And apart from when Luton won the league, I don't know if this is the only team, but that's probably going to win you the league every other year for the last, I don't know how many years. But the gap's also got smaller from teams in the lower half, as you can see, especially teams that get promoted. You can see the gap when they come up, especially. Some adjust, some don't. But like, from probably, I don't know, outside the top five, there's probably 10 teams where you look at them on paper thinking they're going to think they can get into the playoffs this year. And then once you're in the playoffs, you're going to believe in yourself that you think you're going to go up. But yeah, that's one thing that I've definitely noticed. But then when I first played in this league, I was playing for Luton. And I remember a few teams that have gone on and never come back, sort of never look back, if you like. So you always do get sort of some big teams in there. But yeah, it's definitely improved, and it's become a lot more professional. And I think most of the teams now, probably over 90%, are full time. Like, there's not people working other jobs, so their main job is to be a footballer. So it's definitely coming a long way since I was 16 and left school.
Well, as we talked about earlier, you've been Mr. Consistent in this Bromley side so far this season, and that's going to be as important as ever in these next four games, and generally for the team as well. It's four huge games, starting with two long away trips.
Yeah, going into Easter weekend, obviously we knew our position. It was kind of in our hands. Probably going in saying, like, we need to win both games. But if you look at it, we've come away with two draws. We definitely needed to not lose both games, which is what we've done. We've gained ground, I think, a point on both the teams, Bournemouth and Eastleigh, around us. But there's less games now to get where we want to be. There's only four games. They are big games, you can't dress it up, they're big games. But we can only get 3 points. So we can do everything we can within our power, give it our best shot. Football's not always fair, like, life isn't fair, but I believe that we've got enough in the dressing room to get us over the line. But again, it starts Saturday, we can't look past that. Against a good team in good form who are going to Wembley as well, so they're going to want to impress and keep their run going. So yeah, it'll be interesting, but I'm looking forward to it. I definitely I do thrive off of the big games.
and you've become a fan's favourite at Hayes Lane this season. How important have the fans been? And I guess that goes for the same. They're going to be very important in these final few games, the final few hurdles.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. Enjoyed it a lot. We do get very good support down here. Good numbers as well, especially for this level. Probably in the league above, I'd say we get more than a lot of the teams. It's a big ask for them to come to Gateshead Saturday and then Halifax Tuesday. But I know that the ones that don't come will still be supporting us. And that's good to know for the boys going onto the pitch. Like, we're doing it for each other and we want to do it for the fans and also the ones that aren't there, because they will have travelled home and away this season and supported us here. So it's, yeah, they definitely, when they get behind the boys, it does help. And I enjoy it, especially after. Because that's the time where you kind of realise them a bit more. When I'm playing, I don't really take notice of the fans. There could be 10,000, it could be 10. It's not really... it's a weird one, but when you play, I don't know that the fans are there, if you know what I mean. Obviously, once the whistle's gone, like, I can switch off a bit, and looking around, you see, like, a lot of people here that have paid money to come and watch us. So, yeah, I appreciate the support a lot.
It's been such a pleasure having you on the podcast today. We've had such an insight into you and your career and your knowledge of football, which is fantastic. Have you enjoyed it?
Very much so. I was saying I could get used to this.
You're very good at it.
Yeah, no, I enjoy, as you know, I enjoy talking, but I enjoy listening as well. But now it's a new experience. And if there's a paid role coming up anytime soon, I could get involved with the lads.
Oh, here we go. We could have another co-host.
Any sponsors that are watching and that, they want to...
That's it, there we go.
Want to sponsor the show, get your name up in lights. More than welcome.
It's such a pleasure, Callum, to have you on here. Can't express that enough. Thank you so much for your time.
No, I appreciate it. Cheers, boys.
Well, what a brilliant interview that was. Like,
was
I said,
good.
A real insight into Callum. And he's such a great character to have around the place.
He is, yeah.
Well, thank you so much to Callum for that feature-length interview, I might add, and best of luck to him for the upcoming games. He's going to be very important.
Who are we getting
on next? Oh, good question. Are we getting on next? We'll have to wait and see.
Don't know.
Are we letting the supporters decide?
We can do, but it's also dependent on the players' schedules as well.
Players' availability, yeah. Let's leave it as a surprise then. We're going to surprise you with who it is next week. We surprise them every week, but let's make it sound better than it is. Come on, we're going to surprise you next week. I don't know
we're powering through the list, so.
We are, we're getting through it, and that was a really good one, I think. So thank you to Callum for his time. Right, those of you that are going to Halifax on Tuesday the 18th of April, tickets are on sale now. However, if you are buying on the turnstile, it's cash only, and they have asked that you have cash on you, the exact cash on you, I don't know why, but they've said the change is short, so have the exact cash on you if you can. Coach for that one departs at 12:30 p.m. on Tuesday, and it's a £30 return. Once again, book your place, bromleyfc.co.uk. You can still get your spaces for that now. Awards evening upcoming on the 25th of April. Doors open at 6 o'clock. We've got buffet menu, reserve seating for £25, which includes players on your table. A limited number of standing and unreserved seated tickets without food are also available for free on a first come, first served basis. So do come along and join us for that.
It was good last year.
It was great fun, wasn't it? And we did it last year. We did it on the same day as the final game, didn't we? So
it was
Barnet away, which we won 4-2. And then the players came back and we did the awards.
Yeah, and we were here, weren't we?
We were here. You and I missed
for the women's game.
Missed out one of our first away games of the season, or maybe the first. But we've got another sale on in the Jim Brown Club shop. Adult replica shirts are now £15 each and children's are £10. I will say this, they are flying off the shelves now. The online orders, I think there were 40 online orders yesterday and a further few today. So they are flying off the shelves. If you do want a replica shirt from this season, your time is running out. Adult replicas, £15, children for £10. You can get them online, bromleyfc.co.uk, or you can pop into the club shop Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Finally, we've got we're approaching the trial season now for youth teams. Youth and academy trials are available to book and register for on our website at bromleyfc.co.uk. So if you've got a child, boy or girl, that would like to get involved in the youth section or potentially the academy, which is for 16 to 18 year olds, you
or
can
our
find
JPL
out more.
Sides.
Or JPL, you got it right, youth academy, there we go. bromleyfc.co.uk for more information on those. I think that's it, Josh, for another week.
That is it.
Thank you so much for joining me again, Josh, as always.
That's all right. I don't know how long this episode is because we've done it in sections, so...
We have.
Hopefully it's less than 2 hours.
Hopefully it's enjoyable. I think we might,
enjoyable.
Might be pushing less than 2 hours with the length
of the
interview.
If anyone's got any feedback, I mean,
yeah, we're open. We're open to it, you know.
We won't be offended.
No, we won't, certainly.
Matt probably will.
Well, I might be, but yeah. Anyway, moving on. Thank you to all of you for putting up with us and tuning in and listening and showing your support every week. It's very much appreciated. We'll be back for another episode next week. But until then, enjoy the football and we'll see you soon. You could have been following the champions of the Champions League. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. What's all this stuff you're giving us? There's just one team for me.